Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We had a blockbuster trade in Major League Baseball earlier today. It's a great way to start the show. Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Now, we'll kick it off with Major League Baseball. Francisco Lindor finally has a new home. Been trade talks, but the Cleveland baseball team and Lindor for well over a year. And now the four-time All-Star shortstop, he's on his way to the New York Mets. Like I said, it took a little while to get this done. Didn't know where Lindor was actually going to end up. He has some high salary demands, and you would have to expect that the Mets would be the team to meet those demands, especially after giving up everything that they did. Cleveland baseball team is going to give up Carlos Carrasco as well. And the Mets, who have a new owner, he's obviously committed to spending at high levels. Now, the Indians will send Lindor and Carrasco to the Mets for infielders Andrés Giménez, Amed Rosario, Josh Wolf, and Isaiah Green. And this is a deal that Cleveland, I guess they're looking, will keep them competitive moving forward. I don't know. You're giving up the best player in the deal, plus Carrasco as well. But Lindor is going to be eligible for free agency after the upcoming season, and so it was inevitable. And like I said, this is a deal that had been talked about for so long because the Indians were never going to pay Lindor what he's going to fetch on the open market. And it also, really, when you look at shortstops, the National League is loaded right now. I mean, think about this. Fernando Tatis, Trey Turner, Corey Seager, World Series MVP, Trevor Story, and then it goes on and on. Shortstop in the National League, stacked. You can add Lindor to that list right now. And as far as what he's going to get on the open market if the Mets don't give it to him, it's $30 million plus a season. I don't think there's any doubt. This guy's a real big, big talent. There was talks that he would end up going to the Dodgers because we've seen rentals such as Manny Machado go that route before. I don't believe the Dodgers need him now, especially after the reemergence of Corey Seager this last year. And so then you started looking at teams in the National League that could spend big, and I think the Mets really became the odds-on favorite to land him. But the problem if you're Cleveland, he's been the face of this franchise for a long, long time, and now they don't have that. And Carrasco, he's one of the best comeback stories that we've seen. He had leukemia, and then he comes back, and he's one of the most consistent arms in the American League. I mean, he's 88-73 with a 3.70 ERA. Very consistent. And so we'll see how this works out for the Indians. But for the Mets, I mean, it's a sure sign that this team is doing everything they possibly can to win and win right now. And sometimes you need a new owner to put that philosophy in motion. And this is definitely a big money spending move. So you have the World Series champion Dodgers, you have the flashy San Diego Padres, you have the very close Atlanta Braves. Yeah, the NL is going to be a lot of fun. I don't believe this is the last move that the Mets will make, and I think they're going to be very active come free agency. In fact, and I look at two names in free agency out there right now that could definitely add a little bit of sting to this Mets lineup, and I'm going to start pitching-wise. Trevor Bauer. I mean, if you want to spend money, Bauer is out there, and he is by far the top pitching free agent out on the market. Just think about this. Jacob DeGrom, Marcus Stroman, Steven Matz, Noah Syndergaard, Trevor Bauer? That's impressive. And if you want to go a different direction, hot corner, right-hander, Justin Turner. We've seen him in a Mets uniform before. Two names that I think the Mets could go get. and really just looking at the division, if the Mets were to go out and land those two, because I think this is a team that's going to compete and be right there as far as a playoff spot is concerned. I think it's a wild card squad right now. And for any team out there, Dodgers, Braves, you don't want to play this team in the wild card game. Padres, same conversation. You better win your division because you don't want to see this Mets team, I don't believe, in the wild card. But you look at the division right now. Yeah, the Braves, yeah, they're probably still the top team. But this makes the Mets better than the Nationals, the Phillies, and the Marlins, hands down. And again, I don't think the Mets are done. That's a marquee move made today in Major League Baseball. Elsewhere, we could talk about the NFL. You know, we have playoff football coming up this weekend. And the Sunday night matchup features division rivals, Browns Steelers. And I've said this before, and I'm going to go back to it. The NFL hasn't been consistent as far as the COVID protocols are concerned, or maneuvering games, postponing games. I don't feel they've been consistent. I feel that certain teams get the benefit of the doubt, especially with flex scheduling. I have felt that way for a very long time. I think this backs it up even further. The Cleveland Browns have not practiced all week long. Their head coach has COVID. Their building is closed. Baker Mayfield and his offense haven't been able to be on the same field since Sunday. And now they have over six starters on the COVID list. And the NFL has no plans at all to postpone this game. And so looking at the COVID and the roster situation for the Browns, here's what it is. Players that are out due to COVID-19 Sunday night. Ronnie Harrison Jr. not playing. Joel Bitonio not playing. Kadarrell Hodge out. Kevin Johnson out. Montrell Minder out. Players that have not been activated from the COVID-19 list yet. Denzel Ward, Malcolm Smith, and Harrison Bryant. That's a lot of talent for the Cleveland Browns not in this game. Now, as far as postponing it, you really can't do that. I mean, you can't. It's playoff time. It's a little bit different than the regular season. So even though I'm saying I don't feel the NFL has been consistent, and look, they haven't been. All year long, they were not. The Browns, oh, they've waited a long time to get to the playoffs, and this is a depleted roster. And it was one of those games I was back and forth on. I took Pittsburgh, but I was back and forth on it. I could see a route for Cleveland. The way things are shaping up, this team's not going to be able to practice. It's Thursday, and the team facility has been closed all week, and they have a Sunday night football game. They are going to be so out of sync and so... the timing's going to be completely off for this squad. Not a good look. If you're a Browns fan, I apologize. Because it was a winnable game at one time. It's a playoff team. But things aren't looking good for Cleveland. And again, the NFL, they can't really do anything. You can't postpone this game. You can't push it back to Wednesday. Because if the Browns or the Steelers, whoever wins that game, if you play on Wednesday, you got to jump back and play again on Saturday or Sunday. You can't do that. Sunday Night Football, it's the last playoff game of the weekend, not looking good for the Cleveland Browns. Let's take a look at the schedule in the NBA. Boy, it was not a kind couple of nights for the Utah Jazz. I thought they'd bounce back last night against the Knicks, and I was wrong. New York picks up a 12-point win, and the Jazz continue just to play sluggish on both ends of the floor. Off night for the Jazz tonight, 5:30. We have the number one team in the NBA, eight games into the season, the Philadelphia 76ers on the road to take on the Brooklyn Nets. No Kyrie Irving in tonight's game. He is going to miss it due to personal reasons. 6 o'clock tonight, we get Cleveland at Memphis. 8 o'clock on TNT, the Mavericks and the Nuggets, two teams that have struggled out of the gate, but two teams that are very playoff quality. And anytime Luka Doncic is on TV, I want to watch. This kid is so good. And so I think we got a fantastic matchup on TNT. A great doubleheader, really, when you look at it. The Spurs and the Lakers at 8 o'clock tonight, and then Minnesota at Portland. So a short NBA slate, only five games, and that's what the schedule looks like. Here's what we have coming up on Drive Time Sports. We're going to talk high school basketball. Tomorrow night, the Emory Spartans will open up Region 12 play right here on KOAL. Coach Jeff Cincinnatus will join us to talk about that. We'll bring in Tom Perkins, who's an independent NBA scout, and I want to talk about the Jazz. Let's focus on them for a good portion of this segment. What is going on with Utah? Should you be concerned if you're a Jazz fan to be at 4-4? My biggest concern is Donovan Mitchell not playing well on the defensive end of the floor. I don't really care about the shooting percentage because Donovan's a volume scorer. He's going to have to be a volume scorer. A couple of things that do worry me, though. Bojan Bogdanović has not been great. The Jazz defense has been okay. But I worry about Donovan on that end of the floor. We'll talk to Tom Perkins. That's coming up in just a bit. Also, we'll continue to talk Major League Baseball and the trade that went down today. The New York Mets landing Francisco Lindor. Marquee move in the big leagues. That's all coming up here on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We're back right after this.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're going to talk high school basketball today on the Coach's Corner. Coming up tomorrow night right here on KOAL, we're going to have the season opener, the Emory Spartans, at home taking on the Richfield Wildcats. It's always an entertaining game when these two teams get together. A lot of history if you just go back over the last couple of state tournament contests. And live coverage tomorrow night will begin at 6:30 and then tip off at 7. If you can't get out to the game, we'll have you covered here on KOAL. We'll talk about that and more right now with our next guest, Coach Jeff Cincinnatus, joining us over the phone. And Coach, as always, a pleasure. I appreciate the time again. Thank you.
Oh, always a pleasure, Jordan. Appreciate you getting me on again.
Yeah, definitely, Coach. I know it's been kind of a dead week. We get out of the holiday season, and really just not a lot of basketball to be played for these kids. The last time we saw this squad, it was on the road against Manti, a very compelling game. And since then, it's kind of been, I guess, a rest period. But still, I'm sure you expect a lot of these boys, even though there haven't been a lot of games over the last week and a half.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it, but honestly, to have this practice time this week was something that we needed. With the way the season started, getting pushed back and then started to play games, you know, there's just a lot of stuff we didn't get a chance to cover before we jumped into preseason games, and now that we've had preseason games, we see things that we need to work on. So we've been touching on those things all week. I think it's been a good week of practice, and it's one that we needed. I'm kind of glad we didn't have any games earlier in the week, and it's given us a time to work on some things. But, you know, we're excited to get region play started, and obviously Richfield's always a great team, and to our advantage, we get them at home Friday night, and we've talked before that, you know, region is going to be so competitive that you got to win your home games, and this is obviously a big game for us on Friday night. Coming off a subpar preseason, in my opinion, you know, there's some games there we should have won that we didn't. And, you know, we played well at times, but we really got to just start putting, you know, four quarters together. And if we do that, I feel really comfortable about our group.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head, Coach, when you're talking about being competitive every single night when you play region. And I know we'll talk about the RPI in just a moment, but that's a big benefit. You're going to have a quality opponent each time out. And, you know, outside of South Sevier just dropping out of the top 10 a couple of nights ago with the rise of Judge Memorial, there were five out of the six teams were inside the top five from Region 12. That's the type of competition that we're going to see night in and night out.
Yeah, it's true. Our region is by far the most competitive in 3A, in my opinion. And it shows with the RPI that came out last week. And, you know, we're down in the RPI, which, you know, I understand. I mean, we had a subpar preseason. Like I said, there was games there we should have won. You know, I feel comfortable about some of the bigger schools that we did play against and how we played against those schools. And I mean, I really feel good about everything other than our North Sanford game. I mean, I go back to that game where we got beat by 25 or whatever it was, and we just didn't compete that night. But every other night we have competed. We've given ourselves a chance to win in the fourth quarter, and we've just got to learn how to do that. But, you know, the RPI is an important thing nowadays, and it is early. I mean, it's first rankings that have come out, and it's really hard to judge everybody. But, you know, our region is by far the most competitive, and yeah, we're going to play quality teams every night that we play a region game. And it's only going to help our RPI, especially if we can get those wins.
I know it's kind of a million-dollar question, Coach, and you and I talked about this following the setback to Manti, but have you been able to gauge why the team hasn't been able to put four quarters together? I mean, we saw in South Summit, I mean, there was a lull in the middle of that game. Kids came on really strong in the fourth quarter. Manti, competitive throughout, had a little bit of a lull in the fourth quarter. I mean, that could have been the same thing against Juan Diego. I mean, we've seen that before. When this team puts four quarters together, very difficult to beat, but that has been the problem.
You know, I'm trying to put my finger on it, Jordan. I'm going to take that responsibility as our being our head coach. That, you know, one thing I've mentioned to the kids is I think we need to be in better shape. I've been trying to run a lot of different guys on the floor, which we've talked about. I'm big on getting guys time. But when you look at it, the core of our five or six guys that have been playing most of our minutes, you know, they're playing at such a high level, and they have to just for us to compete every night. They're given so much energy that I really think we're running out of gas come midway of the fourth quarter. And me as a coach, I need to get them some rest time, you know, before then, and I don't think I've done a really good job with that, and I think it's shown. I also think we just haven't been in those situations a lot. You know, we talked about this group not having a lot of varsity experience, and you know, they've got the varsity experience now, so there's no question that we should be finishing those games better. But you know, to start with, it is a different game at the varsity level, and I think we might be a little bit tight, you know, in those tighter games, and we just need to relax and play loose. And again, that's my job as a head coach, to make sure those guys are playing relaxed, that we're just continuing to do what we were doing to be successful in the first place. But I need to do a better job. I'm going to take it upon myself to do a better job with these guys in the fourth quarter, make them feel comfortable, but also have them a little bit fresher so that we can finish ball games. And, you know, and if we can do that, you know, we're gonna be pretty good.
Yeah, I think, Coach, I mean, all in all, if you look at it, you win one close game, and sometimes that pressure just it alleviates in the future.
That's true, and that's what we need. We need to get one of them off our chest. This week in practice, we did a lot of situational stuff with the game clock. 2 minutes left in the game, 1 minute left in the game, 30 seconds left in the game, you know, with different scenarios. And we kind of struggled with it in practice, just like we have in games. And so I think it's something that was good for us to do in practice, because we definitely need to get better at it, and we need to continue to do it in practice, because you can't just, you know, expect these guys to do it when game time rolls around if you're not practicing it. Like anything else, you practice shooting, you practice your out of bounds, you practice your offense. We need to practice these game situations that, you know, you're down a point with 30 seconds left, and how do you handle that? How do you handle that pressure? And so it was a good practice yesterday with us doing that, and I hope that'll carry over to, you know, we're going to have close games in our region, and we need to win one of those close games to start with and get a little confidence in it. But, you know, I'm excited about moving forward and our opportunity that we have.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Jeff Cincinnaris of the Emory Spartan boys basketball team. Tomorrow night, Region 12 opener as they take on the Richfield Wildcats. Coach, we'll talk about Richfield. They did lose a lot of firepower from last year's team, which advanced to the state championship tournament at the expense of Emory in a very entertaining semifinal contest. But still, they do have a couple of kids returning this year that were difference makers last year. For instance, Max Robinson and Will Robinson, two of the leading scorers on this year's team. But the offensive numbers aren't necessarily out of this world impressive for Richfield. It's what they can do defensively, and that's kind of been this team's identity under Coach Rand Janes for the last several years.
Yeah, Rand does such a great job with his teams, you know, from freshman level to varsity level. They buy in on the defensive end. They've always been a great defensive team, you know, going back to when I was the head coach at Carbon playing them in our region. They're good. They're good defensively. And then the years where they have offensive firepower there, you know, are the years that they make a run for the state title. And this year they are down a little offensively, but they still have guys that can shoot it. When you leave them wide open, they're going to attack the basket on you, and you know they're going to shoot free throws well every year. And that's kind of where this team is at this year. I think they're averaging somewhere in high 40s, low 50s as far as points go. But defensively, they always play solid defense every night, and that's what gives them a chance to win. And they're going to play solid defense again come Friday night on us. And we got to find a way to get out and run on them a little bit and take advantage of our athleticism, instead of being in a half court set against them, because they are so good defensively. But size wise, another team we match up really well size wise against, as we did with Manti. I thought, you know, they don't have a lot of size on us, and so rebounding is going to be a key to this game. And you know, I think it's going to come down again to the fourth quarter and who can make the plays, and that's why we've been working on some of this stuff all week. But Richfield's always such a solid team. Emory and Richfield have so much history going back to, you know, clear back to the days when I played. And that history has always been there, and it's always an exciting matchup. And I look forward to nothing less tomorrow night than a great game between the two of us.
Yeah, I know that a lot of people in Emory County really get up for the Richfield game. I mean, there's always talk of Carbon and Emory, but for a lot of people in Emory County, it's Richfield. It's the big rivalry. Have you sensed that at all, Coach? The kids understand, like, yeah, this is a big game. This is against a team that knocked them out of the state tournament last year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, and I talk about it with them because, you know, it's a team, you know, my senior year that you know, took us out of a region championship and an undefeated, you know, record going into that. And so, it's always been a big game, you know, and I agree. It's probably the biggest rival in basketball that Emory has is Richfield, and it's been that way for a long time, and, you know, it's not going to change. I mean, we're going to be in each other's region again in a new alignment, so it's going to stay there. And, you know, the two programs are always so good when it comes to basketball. You know, it's never a blowout. I mean, it's always a competitive game. And even if one team on paper is so much better than the other, they always find a way to make it a competitive game. So, you know, the guys, not a lot of them got a chance to play in that game last year. They were sitting, you know, on the bench watching. But, you know, even sitting on the bench watching, you know, you want to get your opportunity to play. And there are opportunities upon them now. So I hope we make the most of it. And, you know, I've been trying to get our guys fired up for tomorrow night. And I think we're going to come out ready to play.
Coach, I want to talk offensively and what you guys have going on. In this game, I know you want to get up and down the floor. You and I have talked about that. When Richfield's in a half-court set, they're very difficult to get by and very difficult to have success against. And so is that pretty much the concept all night? I mean, you really want to push the ball? You want to make this track meet?
I do, and I know we have the athletes to do it. And there again, if we're doing that, I've got to find time to get guys rest because, you know, to run up and down the floor, you know, all night long, you're going to get tired. And so I've got to make sure I'm getting guys rest so we can continue to run up and down the floor. You know, and I want to take advantage of having, you know, our big men on the floor. You know, Brett Rasmussen needs to be on the floor, and he needs to play big for us tomorrow night because, he could possibly be the biggest guy in the gym. And I thought we got some great minutes out of him at Manti when he came in. By far played his best varsity minutes for us. And, you know, I look forward to him to continuing to do that for us. And tomorrow night will be big when he's on the floor that we need to take advantage of his size. But for the most part, yeah, I want to get up and down the floor. I think that's when we're at our best, attacking the basket and, you know, just outrunning guys. And, again, that's our main goal tomorrow. Hopefully it's working for us, and hopefully we can stay fresh while we're doing it.
Coach, it's always fun to get you on the show and talk about Emory High School basketball. I'm looking forward to tomorrow night's game. And we can't forget, we also got a game on Saturday as well against Layton Christian. That's a non-region game.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one for us. I mean, you get these private schools, you don't ever know a lot about them. They've been up there playing a lot of bigger schools in the preseason and took some lumps, but they beat a good Morgan team who's in 3A and you know, right up there in the RPI as well. And so it's going to be a tough game for us. You know, I don't know a whole lot about them other than it's going to give us an opportunity to go on the road and play another quality opponent and, you know, and just kind of prepares us for going on the road in region games. And that's what I tell our guys. It's going to be like going, you know, to Richfield or to San Juan or somewhere and playing on the road. And so we need to go on the road. We need to play well. And, you know, we got shorted a couple games during the holiday over with the COVID stuff and everything. So, you know, we need another game under our belt, and it's only going to help us. And so, yeah, I'm excited about, you know, going Saturday. Definitely don't want to look past Friday night because that is the biggest game of our season so far. And then Saturday will be the next biggest game. So we just take it one game at a time. But, yeah, we're going to get some basketball in the next few days after having a few days off, and hopefully the practice time is going to pay off for us, and look forward to, you know, everybody getting a chance to watch. I mean, they are allowing four people in to watch now. The new, you know, mandates have been kind of changed where we only had two before, now it's four. So hopefully we'll get some more people in our home gym and things like that, and hopefully we can just continue to have a good season.
Yeah, no question. No question. Coach, once again, thank you very much. We'll see you at the game on Friday.
Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.
We're going to break for just a moment, but we do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. It's right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game. Harris, pick and roll. Favors takes it strong and one. Oh, my. Watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
Last night, right here on KOAL, the Utah Jazz, they suffered a 112-100 loss to the New York Knicks. Not the best of two nights for the Jazz because, well, they had also lost to the Brooklyn Nets just a couple of nights ago as well. So the Jazz last two outings, two losses in New York. We're going to talk about the Jazz struggles and what lies ahead for a team that's not playing well. They get the Milwaukee Bucks next, so it's not as if it gets any easier for the Jazz. And we'll also bounce around the NBA. Joining us right now of HoopCityNews.com, we have Tom Perkins, an independent NBA scout. And Tom, as always, a pleasure. I appreciate the time again today.
Glad to be here. It's always fun to talk to you, Jordan.
Well, Tom, we'll start by talking about the Jazz. As I alluded to, last night, a 12-point loss to the Knicks. I really expected the Jazz to bounce back because it was just a couple of nights ago they were blown out by the Brooklyn Nets, 130-96 at a game in which it was never close. Brooklyn developed a 35-14 lead. If memory serves me right, it was 20-4 Brooklyn at one point in time in that game. The Jazz are now 4-4, and there's a lot of basketball left to be played. And I've told Jazz fans over the last 12 or so hours, the sky is not falling. There's a lot of basketball left. But would you be concerned about this Jazz team at the moment?
Somewhat not. When you look at both those losses, right, you can't say much about the loss to the Nets. That's a good team. That's a really good team, okay? And just think, they don't have Dinwiddie. That Brooklyn Nets team was primed and set up to give the Lakers a large run for their money. And probably coming out of the East almost for sure. But when you talk about last night's game against New York, a couple of different things. One thing is, my buddy Tom Thibodeau is now the head coach. And he is very defensive-minded. As you could see, the way they play defense, and he has a way of invoking his style of defense to any team that he coaches. Plus, Julius Randle is no joke. I'm surprised that the Lakers ever traded him, but Austin Rivers has come through as a nice sixth man, so they've got enough pieces in their. In their cupboard to go ahead and give a quality team like Utah a loss. But I wouldn't panic just yet. You know, I think, you know, Rudy Gobert just signed his contract, and Donovan Mitchell is still Donovan Mitchell, and he's improving by each game. So no need to push the panic button yet, but, you know, they've got to go ahead and make some real strides here in the next, I'd say, 15 games to make you feel comfortable again.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Donovan Mitchell is concerned, again, it's a small eight-game sample, but he has not been efficient. I mean, if you look at the PER rate, it's way down up to this point in time, and if you just look over the last six games or so, last night against the Knicks, he shoots 34% from the field. Against Brooklyn, he shoots 45%. You can live with that, but he's a volume scorer as he puts up 31 points. He shot 39% against the Phoenix Suns. And I can live with these offensive numbers because bulk of the offense is going to revolve around Donovan Mitchell. I understand that. But, Tom, one of the aspects that is frightening, Donovan Mitchell has not been good defensively. And I remember when Utah grabbed him out of Louisville in the draft, one of the best shining spots for Donovan Mitchell was this guy's a lockdown defender. And I haven't seen that in the first eight games. And I don't know if it's a combination of last year, really the bubble and everything that took place, the short off season. I don't know if it's he's exerting so much energy on the offensive end of the floor. But Donovan Mitchell does not look like the defender that I have grown to love over the last couple of years so far this season.
Well, one of the things that's happened is, you know, the whole league knows about Donovan Mitchell now after a couple of seasons. And they know what he's capable of. So the first name mentioned in a scouting report for any team that plays the Utah Jazz is Donovan Mitchell. They're going to key on him like they've never keyed on him before, because even though that Rudy Gobert is a player that is solid and a very good contributor and one of the best centers in the league, he's not a Donovan Mitchell. So you got to go ahead and go after the head of the snake, which is Donovan Mitchell. So now all the defenses are keying in on Donovan Mitchell. I'm sure that that kind of effort also affects his defensive ability, because he has to work a whole lot harder on offense than he did before when he was not kind of a relatively unknown.
Fair point, and I think when you look at what the Jazz have done offensively, and we can talk about a move that they made in the offseason. They actually made this move last year when they made a trade for Jordan Clarkson. They brought him in for Dante Exum, and then they re-upped Jordan Clarkson in the offseason. It's a move I'm still in love with. There's a guy averaging over 15 a game. In fact, last night against the Knicks, he was good, scored 19 points in 20 or so minutes off of the pine. This kid right here has kind of been a catalyst for the offense coming off of the bench, and I think if you add Derek Favors to it, it's a potent bench. You'll get potent bench production. But where are the shortcomings right now with this team? Well, I mean, it seems like they've improved on the bench. Bojan Bogdanovic is back. Mike Conley at times has looked very good. So why are the Jazz 4-4?
Well, again, it's because people are, in fact, keying in on Donovan Mitchell and that they've got to have more people step up. I think at the same time, Mike Conley has stepped up in his point production, but his team game, his floor game, that's kind of lacking. He shouldn't be just averaging 5.1 assists per game. Again, Jordan Clarkson has stepped up. And, Bogdanovic, he's coming off an injury. He's just trying to feel himself back into reality. So there's some improvement that is almost guaranteed ahead for the Jazz because of the Bogdanovic coming back and because of Mike Conley kind of getting his feet back. And, the fact that Jordan Clarkson is definitely one of the top two or three players, that's a good thing. So, yeah, I wouldn't worry too much. I think that they're going to come around and play some solid ball. But Mike Conley should never be averaging 5.1 assists because he's one of the best playmakers in the game.
Agreed. And as you mentioned, Bogdanovic has not been great so far this year, but he's only going to get better as he continues to find his footing. Again, Tom Perkins, our guest right now from HoopCityNews.com as we talk NBA basketball. Tom, you mentioned the coaching with the New York Knicks. I'm talking about the coaching for the Brooklyn Nets. This was one of the offseason storylines that kind of got pushed aside just because of how fast I think everything was moving. But all in all, it's a brand new era for the Brooklyn Nets, and their head coach is Steve Nash. And I don't know if people have forgotten about this or not. Things have not been even for Brooklyn. I know they're 4-4. Kevin Durant has not played a whole lot. Same could be said. Kyrie Irving is still not 100%, although he has had some outstanding games. You mentioned Spencer Dinwiddie. How would you assess Steve Nash's ability to coach 8 games into his tenure?
Well, I think, he's doing a pretty good job. I hope that... I guess I shouldn't say this out loud, but I hope that D'Antoni's influence on their offense isn't too dominating because, they need to think defense. They have to think defense. But Durant, of course, has been out a couple of games because of the COVID virus. Not that he has it, but he's been having to be quarantined for 4 games. Caris LeVert is a real, real coming solid player in this league. So they're doing pretty well, but they were really on their way to, challenging the Lakers for the championship until Dinwiddie went down. So I think that Nash has been doing a good job, and the more and more that they can emphasize defense, the better it is. And that Kevin can play defense. He did it at Golden State, and so can Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving is so, so good. It's incredible, offense and defensively. So, yeah, this is a team that needs to be reckoned with. So a loss by the Jazz to the Nets, not impossible to imagine.
No, not impossible. I mean, obviously, if you're a Jazz fan, it's unacceptable to give up a 20-4 run to start that game. That's not acceptable. But no, I agree with you. I mean, it's a quality team. But if we speak about quality teams, we have to talk about the team that has the best record in the NBA as we speak, and that is the Philadelphia 76ers. Again, new leadership if we talk coaching. Doc Rivers in Philly, Daryl Morey in the front office. They really haven't changed everything from a facial standpoint, right? I mean, this team looks very familiar, looks similar to what we have seen over the last couple of years, but one has to be impressed with the outstanding numbers that Joel Embiid has put up so far this season. Tobias Harris is another one that looks like he is going to benefit greatly in Doc Rivers' system, and the same could be said for a Seth Curry or a Ben Simmons. This Philadelphia 76er team looks very, very good, and I hate to put blame on coaches, but now maybe you have to look at the fact that Brown was not the right guy and Doc Rivers is, because this team looks completely different.
Yeah, I never did think that Brown was the right coach because he looked like, headlights on and nobody's home in the playoff over a year ago, like 2 years ago, that playoff. That was terrible handling of the team. But yeah, they've got some good pieces. The only thing that I find right now that's not so hot is there are scoring people. You know, I wish that they would be doing more defense than they did than they do scoring. But they've got it certainly enough firepower in scoring, especially when you think like you take a look at Seth Curry. Seth Curry has been a tremendous addition to that team, and you know he's going to help them big time. And then of course they're sitting pat on Ben Simmons. You know, they've been offered James Harden probably every day for the past 30 days, and they're sitting tight on Ben Simmons, which is probably a good idea, because that guy's a heck of a player, minus the shot, of course. So, yeah, they've got pieces enough to do some damage and to win games by simply outscoring the opponent.
Yeah, as far as Ben Simmons goes, and I've been on this bandwagon for a long time, if you have to give up Ben Simmons and more pieces for James Harden, there's no way in a million years I'm taking that particular deal. There's no way. I know people want to harp on the fact that this guy cannot shoot from the outside. This guy's shot has been inconsistent. But, Tom, there's not a more diverse player in the game. And when I say that, I'm not talking about, again, we got to throw offense off the table and people get too wrapped up in it. But when you look at the challenges and the versatility and the athleticism of a guy this size, there's not too many people like that walking around the NBA. And if the 76ers are going to have success, it's going to be because of Ben Simmons.
Absolutely. Yep. You're right about that. Because, you know, he may score 13, 15, 16 points a game, but they're very valuable points, and they're probably more often than not on the inside. So, yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. You're right that Ben Simmons is a real key there. Another key that I failed to mention, which is pretty obvious, getting Dwight Howard is a very good acquisition. You know, talking about getting assists for Conley, 5.1, as opposed to what he should be getting. Dwight Howard is averaging 5.6 rebounds a game with averaging only 13 minutes a game.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good number.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That is really huge. And when his time goes up, his rebounding will go up. So, yeah, they got a good team.
Again, Tom Perkins, our guest of HoopCityNews.com. We talked Jazz, we talked a little Philadelphia, we talked Brooklyn, and again, the interesting storyline of Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni in Brooklyn. That's fascinating, and it's something to pay attention to, I think, throughout the entire year. Tom, it is always a pleasure to get you on the show. Before I let you go, please tell us about HoopCityNews.com.
Well, as you know, we're going in our 10th year now of HoopCityNews.com, and we've got a lot of loyal readers. People are liking it, and of course, they're loving the radio show that I put out to them once a week or once every other week. And you can always get there, HoopCityNews.com. Even if you don't receive an email about the radio show, you can always go to HoopCityNews.com, click on the blog, and look at all the articles and all the radio shows that have been delivered.
Tom, always a pleasure. I know we'll do it again real soon. Thank you again for the time.
Fantastic.
We're going to take one last break, but we do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll end with some Major League Baseball talk. We'll revisit the deal. Francisco Lindor on his way to the New York Mets. That's coming up next.
Since they want to know.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 7:50 a.m.
Still talking about the monumental trade in Major League Baseball earlier today. Francisco Lindor on his way to the New York Mets. And joining him is going to be Carlos Carrasco. And really, all the Mets give up is Amed Rosario, Andre Jimenez, Josh Wolf, Isaiah Green. I mean, when you stack this up with the Mookie Betts deal, this probably looks even more lopsided than that. Even though I believe Betts is the best player in baseball, Lindor for middle infield. Like I said, the NL is just stacked with talent at shortstop. I'll bring in Travis Anderson to help close this out. Wow. Solid deal for the Mets, to say the least.
Good deal for the Mets. Once they got Steve Cohen in as the new owner, you knew he's going to be aggressive. So he sits back, he waits, and he's aggressive, and he goes out and gets a great player in Francisco Lindor, who I've been, you know, telling you for past couple of years, I wish Cincinnati would trade everything for him, and now that can't come true.
Well, look, in Major League Baseball, when you have an aggressive owner or an aggressive ownership group, good things happen. It's so different than football and basketball in that sense. Yes, there is a luxury tax, but when you have aggressive owners, they'll break that luxury tax easily. And it's a lot easier to get around those salary cap rules in baseball than it is in basketball. Much more so than football. It's a hard cap in football. That's not the case in baseball or basketball. And when you look at the NL East, it is one of the only divisions in which five teams have the ability to get into the playoffs year in and year out. Yeah. But it's a tough division, to say the least, right? So you have to be aggressive in this division. And we've seen signs of this from the Mets in the years past. Remember the Robinson Cano deal?
They tried, yeah.
It didn't work out. They paid Cespedes a lot of money. A lot of money. Didn't work out. They paid Jed Lowry a lot of money. He had like 12 at-bats coming over from Oakland. They've spent money. It just hasn't worked. Cohen comes in and he says, no, we're not going to spend money. We're going to make a trade, and then I'm going to spend money. And regardless if they retain Lindor or not, which I believe they will, they're going to give him everything and more that he wants, and I don't believe they're done yet. But even if they couldn't retain him, so what?
You go out and make the move, and then you're all in for this year, and if it pays off and you so happen to win the World Series and he leaves, who cares? You got what you needed out of him, and you won.
At the bare minimum, it sends a message to the rest of the league that it's not just the Padres trying to make a splash in the National League, and it's not just the Dodgers and the Braves that you have to consider as NL contenders. Now, I don't believe the Mets are there yet.
Nope.
I'll put them in the same category as the Padres. They still have some work to do.
And they probably are going to get Trevor Bauer. You and I were talking off air. He's probably the next domino to fall, and I think that, you know, it makes sense for the Mets. You go out and you add Trevor Bauer to that rotation.
Yeah, think about this. They're replacing Rick Porcello and Michael Wacha with Carrasco and Stroman, because Stroman didn't play last season.
It's a great upgrade.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge upgrade. And then you have Pete Alonso. All in all, I really like what the Mets are doing. Like I said, still a little ways away. And again, you can't compare Major League Baseball to the NBA. You can and you can't. But I do want to tell Jazz fans, see what a new owner can do for you.
Yeah, it puts an energy into, you know, everything.
And I think that's going to happen in Utah. Now, it's different in the NBA. It is. But I do believe the Jazz have an owner now that is highly energetic, highly motivated to spend money and win.
Yeah, it's different in the NBA because stars drive the league.
And they do.
They dictate what they're going to do and where they're going to go and things like that. You know, it's different from baseball where they don't have that, you know, luxury.
But still, I think they have an owner that can appeal to players.
Yeah, that's the thing. It just takes one guy to jump ship, you know, to the Jazz, you know, with the new ownership.
That's all it takes.
And there it goes. And then everybody else wants to follow suit.
Yeah, that's all it takes. And I think that the Mets have begun that process with this trade for Lindor today. Out of time of the show. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. Got a great one lined up for you. Coach Scott Madsen of the USU Eastern Athletic Department will join us. We'll talk about everything happening at USU Eastern. We'll talk more NBA basketball. Jabari Davis is set to join us. And everything else that's happening as we prepare to open up region play in high school athletics. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We're out.